I served within the RAF between 1991 and 97, so I was discharged for my sexuality, because at the time it was illegal to be gay. During that time, I got the British Humane Society Bronze Award for bravery for rescuing a pilot from an aircraft. I got a Good Show Award, and I was also mentioned in the Queen's Birthday Honours List by a Commander-in-Chief's commendation. However, just because of my sexuality, it was seemed I was incompatible to service life.
I'm Cutwell Owen Bridge. I'm at 71 IR Squadron at RAF Wittering. I'm a aircraft technician, and I'm also the bisexual pillar lead for the RAF LGBT Freedom Network. I've been in the RAF since 2005, and I've served here at Wittering, at Marham, at Coningsby, and at RAF Bryce Norton.
So I joined up 91, had to sort of keep it a secret. I remember at the CIO on Fountain Street in Manchester, when they just laughed at the question is, oh, you're not gay, are you? Because you obviously, you had to sign under oath. It was like living a double, treble, quadruple life at times.
So I joined in 2005, and I wasn't out when I joined up. I thought that it would perhaps be a distraction to training. I didn't really feel the pressure to tell anybody at that time. Plus, I was probably still trying to figure things out for myself anyway, and just work out how I felt I would identify myself as well as I could do. And the rest of my service, really, I was at Bryce, and again, some of the attitudes that were on the squadron were probably perceived as a little bit old-fashioned, but I was never directly targeted for anything, because nobody knew, really, about my bisexuality, apart from just one or two people and partner at the time. I came out in work 2.5 years ago. The pressures had got to me, really. I thought, I need to have this out in the open, regardless of whether anybody needs to know, whether they don't need to know. I felt that if I was going to be open about it to everybody, I need to be open about it to myself as well. And then it was business as usual, really. So there was no sort of trauma to do with it. And that's when I realised, A, I'd been wasting a lot of my time with this pressure inside me of keeping it in myself, when today's Air Force is more accepting and tolerant of it. And B, I'm much happier for it myself now as well.
How fantastic is that? You know, from experiences that are only 21 years ago, from being kicked out, listening to that just sort of, it warms you up at the same time as sort of upsets me. You know, I'd signed up for 22 years. I loved, and I still love, the Air Force today. I remember I'd just started seeing a lad in Manchester. He got in touch with the Air Force, told the Air Force that I was gay, because he didn't want me to go to AVSENT, which I was going to get posted to. And I remember them just sort of turning around and asking me, SAC Austin, do you have homosexual tendencies? That split second changed my life. I know I could have quite easily have said no, and I think they would have just sort of dismissed it and said, well, thank you very much, there you go. But there comes a time in your life when you've got to be true to yourself. And I suppose it's a bit like when you come out, you know, for anybody, there's a time that you have to just accept yourself for who you are. It was as if like that pressure cooker was just having the lid lifted off it, and you could just be yourself. So I just burst into tears, and literally, I think that answered the question for them. They then sort of told me that I had to get off camp within 10 minutes because I was going to be a threat to the other servicemen and the other people.
Wow. Well, to be given 10 minutes to get off camp just because of the way that you are, especially with all the you know, the commendations and the awards and the service history that goes with it, all that's just completely ignored. You know, I feel quite lucky, really, to be serving in a time that's not even questioned, or, you know, it doesn't even put me in a position of worrying about my career and my future in the Air Force just because of something that I was born with and that I can't help, really. So yeah, thank you. I feel like I have to say thank you, because your experiences was one of those sort of catalytic moments that helped bring about that change, really. So I'm very grateful.
We heard there from Carl Austin Behan and Corporal Owen Bridge. You're listening to Forces Radio BFBS, and this is for Queer and Country. We're hearing from current and former servicemen and women who are lesbian, gay, bi or trans. Andrew Scott served for over 6 years in the British Army. He's now happily married to husband Andrew, but hadn't come to terms with his sexuality before leaving in 2003, just days before James Wharton signed up. James joined the Household Cavalry and served for 10 years, coming out to his colleagues in 2005 at the age of 18. James and Andrew met for the first time at the Royal British Legion Pop-In Centre in Birmingham.
Hi, I'm Andrew Scott. I joined the army in 1997 and left in 2003. I was originally military police, but then transferred to the Adjutant General Corps and spent most of my time attached to the 9th, 12th Royal Lancers.
My name's James Walton, and I spent 10 years in the British Army serving in the Household Cavalry. I joined in 2003 and left in 2013.
I joined the army at a time when it was just kind of allowed to be LGBT, and for a number of years there was still no talk of it. There was no kind of mention of it. It wasn't until probably around 2001, 2002 that I finally started to hear of people coming out in the forces, but at the time when I was there, I think I was just in a kind of my own bubble that I just didn't see any of it, and probably because that was the time when I was trying to come up to terms of my own sexuality, sure, that it didn't really matter what anyone else was going through.
When I did come out in 2005, so when I was 18, within the regiment, it's interesting because I think if you go back and ask those boys what the reaction was, they'd be like, oh yeah, it was fine, no one was bothered. At first, I didn't want to be gay, and I certainly didn't want to come out. And actually, it took very little effort to be able to really put that stuff away because I was busy being a soldier. I had my own group of friends, and I remember the moment I came out to them that I was gay. I was watching Six Nations Rugby, England versus Wales, the opening match of the tournament in 2005. Wales won. I was Welsh, they were English. I was very happy. We got very drunk. They basically said to me, you know, James, is there something on your mind that you want to sort of tell us? And I was thinking, what could it possibly be? And then my mate, Dean, the gobby one, just said, well, it's because you're gay, isn't it? And I couldn't stop myself from just saying yeah. And that was it, I was out.
I couldn't imagine, I'm quite comfortable and confident now with my own sexuality, but at the time, even looking back, I just don't know why I could have done that.
But where were you based, though? The thing I had, which it probably was a blessing, was that I was in London. And the moment that those boys asked me if I was gay, it was like an avalanche. I just couldn't stop it. But of course, I woke up the next morning with the worst hangover in the world, thinking, oh my God, what have I done? You know?
I was based in near Norwich. I was based in Aldershot. I was based in Hohner in Germany. All kind of places that, you know, you don't really find the local gay bar. In fact, opposite the barracks in Hohner was a brothel.
Oh, wow. with a late night
license, and you'd find yourself in there, even if it was just for a drink and nothing else.
Yeah. I think the army has probably changed significantly. For sure, since I've left, but I'd probably say, Andrew, definitely since you've left.
I would agree there. You know, education is what it all boils down to. The people that are now joining the army have had the opportunity to be around gay people. They've had the opportunity to see LGBT on TV, in the media. At the time when I was in the army, you didn't see that. And I can remember Queer as Folk coming on at the time when, thankfully, my person I shared the room with was out that evening. So I was able to watch it, but it was all in secret. And that just, I can't imagine that happening now, just because people of the age who are in the army are more comfortable with, and it's out there, as opposed to in 1997 to 2003, it wasn't.
Former members of the British Army, Andrew Scott and James Wharton. You're listening to Forces Radio BFBS, and this is For Queer and Country. We're hearing from current and former servicemen and women who are lesbian, gay, bi or trans. Squadron leader Catherine Lawson joined the Royal Air Force straight from school in the 90s. Caroline Page served in the RAF for 34 years and was the first openly transgender officer in the UK Armed Forces. The two good friends met to reflect upon the changing attitudes within the RAF.
My name's Squadron Leader Catherine Lawson. I'm a aircraft systems engineer in the Royal Air Force, where I currently specialise in weapons integration for Typhoon. I also happen to be transgender.
Hi, I'm Caroline Page. I served in the Air Force from 1980 through to 2014 as a navigator, initially on fast jets and then battlefield helicopters.
So when we first met at RAF Crossway, didn't we?
Yes.
I think that was the first time I'd met you, but it was also the first time I heard your story. I remember because, you know, when I originally joined, there was nobody out at all. And then obviously I remember hearing of you, you know, back in 1999 when you transitioned. And I guess at that stage I was in a different part of my life, really. As I say, I was aware of you, but my career was only just taken off at that stage. And I certainly wasn't ready to transition, you know, at that stage myself. But hearing of somebody who was just starting that process, and to use one of my other friends' really good terms, you can't be what you can't see. So then seeing somebody actually who was very, very similar to me, it was inspirational at the time and probably led to where I am today, to be honest with you.
So it's my fault.
So it's all your fault, absolutely.
I think things are remarkably different to what they were. Certainly when I joined in 1980, the military was well known and expected almost to be homophobic, and within homophobic was wrapped up all of the LGBT plus. There was the law barred gay service is what it said, but the interpretation of that was that if you were lesbian or bi or transgender, anything different, you weren't acceptable in service, and so you would be dismissed. You would, some people I know that were dismissed actually served a little bit of time in a military prison before they were thrown out, literally thrown out. Others were fined. Some had to pay to leave. Most people that were discovered to be LGBT were out of the door that day. And of course, there was this environment where people were encouraged to report on anybody who was suspected even to be LGBT. And then there was horrendous investigations that went on into your private life. I was having to look over my back all the time. I was worried about being found out. I was worried about my parents finding out. All these kind of things put a huge amount of pressure on you. So how can you focus on your job truly if you're worried about that all the time?
So for me, very, very similar story, actually. So I was, I was about 4.5, 5, realised I was transgender. This was kind of 1977 in Northern England. A particularly hostile time in a hostile place, actually, for anybody who is perceived in any way, shape or form to be different. And so it quickly became apparent that I was never going to be able to be myself. Society just wouldn't allow that to happen. So I joined the military fully expecting to serve my whole career without transitioning. But thankfully, you know, I saw a change in the organisation that would then allow a change in myself and allow me to become a better version of myself. And I transitioned just as I started a master's degree in guided weapon systems. You know, I went to Shrivenham. I'd literally stopped being my old self one day, started being my new self the next day. And that's when I had this eureka moment. And I realised I'd never actually had 100% of my capacity available to me at any stage in my life before.
When I realised that, hang on a minute, this is my life and I've got to live the rest of this life. And I really did consider leaving the military because I didn't see that I was going to be retained in service. But then I realised that if I didn't press that button and say, hello, this is me, and I just walked out, then I've lost everything anyway. So I decided I had nothing to lose by standing up and turning around to the military and saying, I intend to transition gender. I want to stay in and do the job that I love doing. Let's deal with this. And thankfully, they turned around and said, right, okay, we've not done this before, how do we do this? And I said, well, I've not done this before either. So we made it up as we went along. And we had some difficult challenges to persuade everybody that we were just regular people wanting to do a regular job.
For me, transitioning or informing friends and family that you're about to transition is like detonating a £1,000 bomb right in the middle of your life. The more information that's out there, the more support that is out there for everybody that then touches, the better, because actually, you know, those seismic waves then kind of get balanced out quite quickly.
Catherine Lawson, currently serving with the Royal Air Force, talking to Caroline Page, who served with the RAF for 34 years. You're listening to Forces Radio BFBS, and this is for Queering Country. We're hearing from current and former servicemen and women who are lesbian, gay, bi or trans. Jo Mundy is the Scotland representative for the Army's LGBTQ Forum. She took over from Doogie Morgan, who spent nearly 40 years in the British Army. For a lot of that time, he had to hide his sexuality. They caught up at a popular gay bar in Edinburgh to look at how much things have changed over the last 40 years.
I joined the Black Watch in 1979. I'd done my full career with the Black Watch and then continued on long service, eventually retiring last year after near on 39 years military service.
Well, when I first joined the Army, I can safely say I wasn't out. throughout my career, I was never out. It's just the odd people that knew. And it wasn't until I was in Bosnia on my first tour that I knew the ban had been lifted, so I didn't need to hide anything.
And I joined the most homophobic, racist regiment in the British Army, in my opinion. And I witnessed people who were LGBTQ, and I witnessed them getting strung up, beaten, and thrown out of the army. So it made me go even deeper and deeper and deeper. And once I sat to tell one lie, I could not go back on what I said. So I just had to conform to society. Coming from the area in Scotland that we come from, there was no way you could even mention the word gay. So I just found it very difficult. But I knew in my side that I was really, really, really hurting myself. But I just could not come out. And even when the ban came up in 2000, I just could not come out because I was married then, mm-hmm. and I had children. And even today, you know, I think back and say, I just wish I had the opportunity like you, Joe, to be honest and say, you know what, I am gay. But I just could not do it in the 70s and the 80s. And I've seen such progress. You've seen progress, Joe.
Absolutely, yeah.
And the good thing is, if you be yourself, you actually work a lot better. Okay, you produce better work because you're not frightened of someone looking at your back, seeing where you're going, seeing what you're writing, you know, see who you're going out with. You know, I still come up across people who do not like LGBT people. I don't know about you.
You actually get some people to come up to you and say, what's the point of you guys being in this event? Well, we're here to show support for equality and diversity, as we've been doing for the last, 3 years?
You've had a good life, Joe, in my opinion, for being LGBT. I was outed. As I said, I was married and had two children. So I dropped my guard a little bit, and my son's friend saw me on one of the LGBT web pages and sites, told my son, he told his mum. You know, they went and done what they needed to do, and outed me. 5th of December, 1999, I remember it to this day, and that's when I started to lead the life that I wanted to lead. Don't get me wrong, it's not been easy, and I lost a lot of friends within the military, and I think purely down to the telling of the lies, you know, because they say, that's a sham, Doogie, you're not the person that you are now. I know, I'm glad I'm not the person I was then, because I'm a much better person.
When I first met Doogie at 51 Brigade in Stirling, ironically, he was recruiting and I was the discipline clerk there. And when I knew Doogie, loved that person because we got on great. When through the grapevine somebody says, oh, do you know Doogie's gay? My first reaction was, so? That was my first words, and I always remember to this day, like, so it's still Doogie. No, it's no. Actually, it is, because see what you see there and what you see to the right, it's still the same person, just a different sexuality. What's that got to do with you? It's his personal life. That's it. The way we put it across is, see the uniform? It's gender neutral. You can be whoever you are as long as you can do your job.
Joe Mundy and Doogie Morgan there. You're listening to Forces Radio BFBS, and this is for Queer and Country. We're hearing from current and former servicemen and women who are lesbian, gay, bi or trans. Anne Miller-McCaffrey joined the WRNS in 1987 and currently represents the Royal Navy in the Armed Forces Diversity Engagement Team based at Sandhurst. Steve Powell is now with the South Wales Ambulance Service, but served with the British Army from 1988 to 2000. They met for the first time over lunch at a restaurant just off Old Compton Street in the gay heart of Soho in London.
I am in the Royal Navy and I'm part of the Armed Forces Diversity Engagement Team. That is a small team that's set up to go out and talk to different communities about what the armed forces do.
I'm a former soldier in the British Army, the Royal Army Medical Corps, and I was a medic, combat medical technician class 1. I live in Pontypool, South Wales, and I am now, my medical sort of expertise has moved on to the Welsh Ambulance Service, where I am now a serving technician.
Yeah, when I joined the British Army, I wasn't out. Friends and family knew,
but I wasn't out to any of my colleagues in the army. But it didn't stop me joining. And when I did join, actually, I didn't really know what I was joining. I went to the recruitment office and they sort of said to me, what is it you prefer to do in the British Army? But I didn't quite catch the question properly. So I just said, army. So they led out this list then, read out this list where we'd all be going. And this guy said, Stephen Powell, you will be in the Royal Army Medical Corps. I was delighted with that result. And so in I went, and it's predominantly female, the RAMC. So I think as being a gay within this majority of females, I think the balance worked quite well.
I suppose the only difference I did feel at joining up was the fact that men and women were in two separate services. So the guys got to do all the travelling and go to sea and stuff like that, whereas the women did mainly the UK-based shore jobs and, you know, different bits and pieces, logistics. There were some women that were starting to progress into fields like engineering and stuff like that, and now every role in the armed forces is open to women. That's really good and really positive, because nobody should be barred from doing what they want to do because of their gender in that respect. But also in the year 2000, the lifting of the ban on LGB personnel. At that time, I'd been in service for 13 years and I was actually on ship when the ban was lifted as well.
When I joined, actually, I didn't really think of my sexuality. And I always remember going into this rather large lecture theatre in Aldershot on my very first day to start my basic training. And this very crusty senior officer walked in and gave us a bit of a lecture about what's expected of us and whatever. And then he sort of ended up by saying, and by the way, if any of you are gay, homosexual is the word he used, he said, keep it at home. Now, I also almost expected him to say, if you're gay, homosexual, leave now. But he didn't. So I thought, oh, perhaps they've moved on slightly in their attitudes at this very early point in time. But of course they hadn't. But I was thinking that if I'm gay, but I'm not going to leave anyway. I mean, I'm joining the army and that's what I wanted to do. You know, I didn't wear pink combat uniforms or anything like that. You know, I was in this masculine army and that's the way that, you know, that I will behave. And I didn't ever come across any problems because I did tell close colleagues as time went on that I was gay, and it never caused any problems whatsoever. It didn't change anything for me when the ban came out. I just went on as normal. There was no problems at all.
I don't think it changed for many people. You know, people weren't all of a sudden going to jump on their rainbow soapboxes and kind of go, hey, look at me, I'm gay. It was just knowing that you could be yourself without that threat of your career ending, because that's ultimately what the price was. You'd lose your career, and you know, we all know people that has happened to, unfortunately. But the thing is, even with those people that were kicked out, that their loyalty to the service is amazing. I would say, hand on heart, things have changed. We have senior leadership that are on board now with the fact that, you know, there's a zero tolerance towards any sort of discrimination and bullying. But we recruit from society, so with that comes the fact that, you know, in society there are pockets of homophobes, racists and sexists, so we do have people like that that join the armed forces. I would say that even if people had those tendencies, there's a robust mechanism now that deals with any sort of complaints. And it's good because anybody can report an issue or a problem. It doesn't have to come from up high.
Yeah, as Anne says, you'll get that in any sort of organisation, I think, as well. Attitudes have definitely changed. There are specially trained officers as well now who are watching and listening for any of this type of behaviour from other soldiers. And also, as Anne says, they can now report those incidents and they get dealt with quite quickly and robustly. Hopefully from that, then that sort of behaviour is quashed and stopped straight away.
Anne Miller-McCaffrey and Steve Powell there in the heart of London's Soho. You're listening to Forces Radio BFBS, and this is for Queer and Country. We've been hearing from current and former servicemen and women who are lesbian, gay, bi or trans. Let's now hear from someone who was there in the European Court of Human Rights in 1999 when the ban on gays in the military was lifted. In the 80s, he was famous for playing Colin Russell, an openly gay character in EastEnders. He was later to become Lord Cashman, but it was as a founding member of the lobbying group Stonewall that he first became involved in the court cases that led to the lifting of the ban 19 years ago.
We became aware, A, of the injustice and B, of the stupidity of barring people from the armed services based on their private life, which, reading the evidence that we gave to the Select Committee in 1991, reading the evidence against ending the ban from the military is incredible. The way they talk about, you know, there is prejudice, so therefore they can't have gay men in particular or lesbians in the units because that would bring the prejudice out. About fighting forces, units had to be really solid and have no threat within them. Protecting young people, loco parentis, they talked about, protecting young people on behalf of their parents. And I think one of us said, but what about protecting those young gay and lesbians in the armed services who aren't out? And then when they are out, they get kicked out of the service. They go through the investigation and Robert Ely giving evidence in the committee was clear about the violation of certain rights that people had outside if they were charged. And Robert made some... he was in the armed services for 19 years. And after 19 years, they found out that he was homosexual. Everything he had was gone through. Everyone in his address book or letters that he had, everyone was contacted. Everyone was considered potentially lesbian or gay or bisexual. And so it seemed absolutely clear to us that there was a case to be fought for equality. And also pointing out that in Robert's case, 19 years, a brilliant bandsman, a brilliant member of his unit, and suddenly his private life makes those 19 years redundant, made absolutely no sense. We stand on the shoulders of women and men who gave their careers, who then came out and had trouble getting a job in civilian life because their papers were so stamped, services no longer required, etc., etc. They got us to where we are because of them. And we recognise many others who sometimes lost not only their jobs, their careers, but sometimes lost their families and indeed their liberty. Towards the end of the evidence session that we took part in on the 27th of February 1991, John Reed referred to the fact that there weren't enough case studies. And Robert says, to go back to the point made earlier on, one of the reasons that we do not have any case histories to put in front of you is that those of us who have been through this experience, i.e. being discharged, this experience in our lives, do not want to live through the trauma again and are not prepared to speak out. I am prepared to do so. I have lost everything, so have nothing to lose. That is the only reason I am here. I could bring along another 10 people from where I live who have been through similar things. And Robert later on goes on to say, I had 19 years experience and I knew a lot of people. I never came out with any of them myself. I was too scared to do so. And the armed services, to their credit, just were willing to go down that road, and they went down that route very, very quickly. And so I was proud of the most for them when they were allowed to march in their uniforms at Pride. Finally, they could say, look who I am and look what I too do for my country. Well done the military, well done the MOD. It goes to show when if you've got the discipline to accept the rules, you get on and you deliver.
That was Lord Michael Cashman, and you've been listening to For Queer and Country, a special programme for LGBTQ History Month on Forces Radio BFBS.